Hello, Will Galloway, Spinners of Yarns, Series 3 with Jackie Loy Brown and Diana Brown. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Kind of like we always start at the beginning, so let's start with Jackie. Where are you from?
Right. Originally, I've got a Jamaican heritage, my parents, but I'm born and bred in Birmingham, the Midlands, and London in 1989, and I've been here ever since. That's me. That's it, that's where I'm from.
Diana.
Yeah, I was born in West London. I was born in Sutherland Avenue, W9. And I'm a Londoner, really.
But you both have a connection through singing, which is really your start in entertainment, let's say.
Yeah. When I came to London, I'd already started in Birmingham trying to make tracks in the music, so to speak. I was in a couple of live bands, indie bands. That's what we were called then. And then I got a minor record deal with an indie label with my first single, Chilling Groove Gangsters, Jump to the Beat, where they sampled. And that was like the first time people were starting to sample with the keyboard and things. So it was new technology. And then when I came to London in 89, I managed to get myself a deal, a major record deal, with Virgin, one of Virgin's labels called Siren. And then the music cycle started there, ongoing, until, I say, 1999. I think it was the last time I put anything out.
What made you get into singing in the first place?
I love George Michael, Michael Jackson. I just think it's one of those things for some people, and I'm one of them, where I like music. It's in you, it's innate, and I like shaking my body. I like the way my body feels. I like the whole performance aspect of it. And I had a little black brush that I sang into, and it just felt natural. I didn't believe I was a singer, and to some extent, I never really did. But I just felt like I'm going to have a go. Because, you know, I saw Sunita, saw Bananarama, and I thought, come on. And the initial spur was to be a backing vocalist, so I didn't have the pressure of being up front and just enjoy the lifestyle that music business would bring. So that's my idealism. That was my idealism of the industry when I was a teenager.
Weren't you coaxed into it?
No, not really. No, I wasn't coaxed into it. I fell into it.
Okay.
I fell into it.
How did that happen?
Well, my sister got me in my first band. I was sitting outside the pub wall where she worked on Sunday, and she just decided to kick me up the proverbials when she saw a band coming past with the drum kits and the guitars. And she said, I thought you wanted to be in a band. There's a band. And I said, no, I do, but not this band. She says, why not? I'm going to ask them. And then she just shouted, my sister over there wants to be in your band. I wanted to die, I've got to say. I was so I cringed, and I thought, I've got to outplay her. And the band said, we're only over there rehearsing. Come up. And I just looked at my sister and I thought, I'm going up. And the rest, as I say, is history. That's how I actually got into it. Pressure. From a sibling, yeah.
But you're happy that you did it?
Yeah, I have no regrets. I'm cynical for being in the industry.
Yeah.
I'm very, very cynical, because you're meeting all kinds of people. I don't know if you're meeting all kinds of people. You're meeting a certain demographic of people who aspire to not just the music, but the whole business of it. So it's a particular kind of people, don't you think? Because when I go back to Birmingham and my friends that aren't in it, they just see it as this little world. And it is, actually, when you come to think of it, when you look back, you've got to sort of say who you are. I'll be up front, who you are, what you're doing, and sort of believe it. You're not, no imposters.
Yeah.
You've got to sort of have a big chest about it. So I learned to do that. And, it's taught me a lot about the world and taught me how deceptive things can be, what we see on the front and what's really going on behind the scenes. Two different things.
Yeah.
Two different worlds.
So, Diana, what was your introduction to singing?
I think Barry Ken Sharp introduced me to singing, really, because I didn't know I could sing. When I was a little girl, I used to sit in front of the fire with my mum. She was sitting in a wheelchair armchair, and I was sitting in front of the fire thinking, yeah, if I become a hairdresser when I get older, then I can fund myself to become a singer. But I didn't even know that I could sing. So when I met Barry, I think I was 15 when I met him, we started going to discotheques and blah, 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 blah. And we just got together and done this thing called Diana Brown and Barry K. Sharp. And no, it was Diana Brown and the Brothers, something like that. That's how it first originated. I was in Italy. He called me up and said, "Di, do you want to start a band?" I goes, "Yeah." "What, Diana Brown?" And he goes, "The Brothers." Or he said Diana Brown, and I said the Brothers. And that's how it started.
Yeah.
You know, rehearsing.
Yeah.
I didn't know I could sing. You get thrown into the deep end, and then you have to.
Yeah.
You know, but I was singing songs that I was writing with him. I wasn't singing like covers or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it made it easier. Yeah. If you have to sing a cover, you have to be really good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and then my band became the Brand New Heavies when we split up. They became the Brand New Heavies, and then Galliano, with Femi, he wasn't part of our band, but a few of the others were. And that was my introduction to singing and performing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? But I was a natural, I must admit. I was a natural, and I didn't have the nerves or anything before I went on stage. I went on stage, I'd done my job, always had a good old dance, which I loved, and I was happy.
And this would have come through what's known as the rare groove scene at the time.
That's correct, because really and truly, it was like Barry, I must admit, it was him that kind of that forged our way through this kind of ground beat business, which was Blind Faith. He called it ground beat, his made-up name.
Yeah.
And then we went into the rare groove, like James Brown and all that kind of, those black artists, it was kind of a rare groove kind of style.
Yeah.
And that's what we kind of picked up, put in our music so that we could dance. It was all about dancing.
Yeah.
You know, and feeling good from a young age.
Yeah. So this would have been, because we spoke about that when beforehand, where Cat in the Hat and Black Market.
Yeah, Black Market came from this guy who I was when I was working in the Delta Sous.
Yeah.
His name was René Gelston. And he said to me that he was opening a shop in Soho. And did I know anybody And I goes, yeah, about the Sharp DJ and all that. And that's where Black Market came from. You know, DJs, yeah.
But it was different back then, London, wasn't it? You could go out every night of the week.
Because we were younger than and there were places to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. It was really, really great. You had your scene, your clique of people. It was like what Jackie was saying. It's like when you... someone that's not in the music business, you look out and you think, it's quite difficult to get into the music business as well, and to be respected and to have a career, even if it lasts 2 years or 1 year, or maybe 10 years, you know.
Yeah. So, but that was also quite exciting at that point with Rare Groove, because I moved to London in 87 and lived there for 6 months, and that was the height of Rare Groove, I would have said.
Well, I think in 87, I think it was the beginning of, for me.
Yeah.
By that time in 87, I was already, I think, singing with the band, with Diana Brown and Barry K. Sharp, I think. I'm not sure. It's going back a long time now. Or it just started or something like that. But we got our deal in 91.
Right. You remember where the first gig was?
I think it was Gossip. No, what's that one? Yeah,
Gossips.
Gullivers.
No, yeah, that's wasn't that.
There was, that was Mayfair Gullivers, wasn't it?
I can't remember
about Wardour Street.
Yeah, back in the day, there was Moonlighting. There was
what was Gossips?
Gossips is on Dean Street, on the corner there, in the basement.
That's where our first gig was. If I'm not wrong, but we've done so many gigs. All I think.
Yeah.
Probably there.
Was it Lascelles in the band?
Lascelles?
Yeah.
He came in the band later.
Was he?
Yeah, Lascelles, yeah. Lascelles DJ.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lascelles,
he's a lovely fella.
See Lascelles.
He's a great musician as well.
Yeah. I don't think he was part of our band, Lascelles, but
they were DJing, weren't they, together at the Black Market?
Yeah, that's right, because Barry had to bring in the DJs for René.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So then you signed with a major?
Yeah, we signed with Our first deal was with London FFRR,
yeah.
Pete Tong, who signed us, which was really good. And we went on our way. We went to America, done gigs in America. You know, we've done gigs all over.
Everywhere. Japan.
No, we never went to Japan. We never went that far, but we went all over Europe. We went to Germany, the German fest, Berlin, the festies. And it was great. We just gigged everywhere.
Yeah.
Astoria, TV, live TV, everywhere.
How did it all end then?
It all ended, I think, because me and Barry, I think it all ended because the deal finished. I don't think they wanted to give us another deal.
Yeah.
And me and Barry started arguing.
Right.
You know, and the one that upset me the most was like, we were going to do a gig in Croydon.
Right.
And he came to me and said to me, Di, he goes, it's going to be called Barry K Sharp featuring Diana Brown. Right. Because it was always.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then from when I heard that, I just thought, that. Remember, me and Barry were close as friends as well.
Yeah.
And it kind of upset me, and I thought, not sure. So we kind of parted and went our own ways.
Yeah.
And he went on to do Sons of Judah, this, that, and the other. And then eventually I did Diana Brown Project.
Yeah. So then, because you released, you featured on a lot of backing vocals and songs that you might not have been credited on.
Well, I've been credited and not credited. So, yeah. For instance, after the deal with Virgin, our track didn't come out. So we went up and we recorded with the likes of, we used like 808 State Studio up in Manchester.
Yeah.
We were in, what's that bloke from Sledgehammer? What's his name?
Peter Gabriel.
Yeah.
His studio is in Oxford. Yeah. He did everything. So had all the townhouse, and we had like Melanie from Sub.
Yeah, Melanie Williams.
Yes, Melanie Williams. She did backing vocals on my track and stuff.
Yeah.
Like You Had Skin and still they like the B side, like the song I wrote, and the guy I was working with didn't like it. Was upset about it. It was the egos at play.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, well, if we're going to do anything. We're going to do the B side, which was called Crazy, and so that fell apart. And we didn't take up our second options. But I went over to the Pete Waterman camp through a friend when I said, "Oh, I was crying about my deal. Oh my gosh, can't believe there's not going to be another track or anything." And then so I went to Pete Waterman Studios, and I was working with an outfit called Anticapella.
Yeah.
From the rave scene, which was really kicking off in the 90s, and I just thought, well, I'm in the building, let's go. And I went on tour with that to Japan. We did Medam, we did in the south of France,
yeah.
And we did all sorts of we did all sorts of TV, Hitmen and Her. Wow. And then and then from there I met an outfit called Praga Khan, who are major.
Oh, yeah.
Major players in the rave scene, and they took me on board, and then I joined their label Antlers Subway, which is based in Belgium.
Yeah.
And I toed and froed from Belgium between 1993 through to about 99.
Yeah.
And recorded many tracks, and some are discos, some they're experimental.
Yeah.
And I never really listened to them because I'm a jazz funker at heart. I like my soul. I was going, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And I was just singing these riffs and top lines. And I've been crediting on quite a few. And but one of the best things I did was when I fell into Creation Records' lap, and Ed Ball, one of the guys behind the label. He's got an outfit called The Times. I think he was behind Love Corporation and a few more. And got me on board to do backing vocals on an album called Commercial Alternative Something Else Album. So I discovered that, and I'm credited on all that. And we did Creation on Drugs at the Albert Hall. So that was a massive gig because all of the big players on Creation Records was there.
Yeah.
And all I could think about was Blur. And I know they're not on the label, but if I was going to go down that route, I'm a Blur, not an Oasis person, but don't shoot me. Right, so, but yeah, I was really proud to be part of Creation Records, yeah, because, yeah, you know, the biggest label for Britpop at the time. Excuse me. So, in so doing, I'm doing this, like, zigzag path, falling into things, and I didn't know where it was going to take me, but taking me all over the place. So I've got lots of stories to tell, mm-hmm, but we haven't got time for all of them. Yeah, so, but yeah, like you, our paths would have crossed in the jazz funk scene back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
But Jack has had so many kind of big deals in with the big labels, which I wouldn't have looked at me being on my own.
Yeah.
Jackie was very kind of, you know, very, what was that word?
Adventurous, do you think?
More, stronger.
Bold.
Is another word, if I can remember it.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah,
because I wouldn't have been able to do what Jackie did.
But,
because I was with Barry, so I was kind of sweet under that roof. And then when I came away from him, I couldn't see myself going to all these Positiva records.
Yeah, and did I think I even tried. There you go.
It wouldn't have worked for me because I wasn't kind of not brave enough. Is another word. I'll find it.
But can I interject there? Because I believe all female singers have had a male presence to make it happen. Generally speaking, that is a fact. But if we're going to bring it down to race and colour, and because that is a massive factor in the music business, as a black female, I'm not allowed to sound commercial. I've got to sound like Aretha Franklin or Whitney. Mm. You know, as soon as I walk in, they're like, can you do us a little bit of Whitney or something? Yeah. It's like a standing puppet. And I I'm not a Christian. I didn't go to a gospel church. I didn't grow up that way. It's like a stereotype that was thrown and thrust upon me. And I think that because Barry was white and doing soul,
I got away with it.
Because
that's why I could never have done what you've done, because I didn't have that kind of.
But it was all white guys that took me on.
Yeah,
because they thought my voice was soul enough.
Yeah.
But the black guys didn't think the black producers did not think my voice was soulful enough.
Yeah. Mm.
The difference between me and you is because I wouldn't have wanted to be. I couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because I was too much doing what I wanted to do, and I didn't have a brilliant voice like Jackie. I had a very normal kind of.
No, you've got a great voice.
Okay, I've got a great voice, but I didn't have what was the word? I didn't have that brilliant voice. I've got a friend who's got one of those, like a Whitney Houston voice.
Yeah,
she really has, you know. Yeah. I had a voice that I could sing my own tunes to, that worked because I had the funk. And I could dance, basically. So there's all different kind of singers.
Yeah.
You have to have the front.
Yeah.
Like there's loads of singers that are were Top of the Pops. They couldn't sing a word.
Right.
It's who they knew, what they looked like, how they
danced. If they could dance, if they were dancers.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's all to do with that. It's not to do with, in this country, you've got a voice like Whitney Houston. Because there's very far and few between black women voices in this country that sound like Whitney Houston.
Well, I don't know. I just think up and down all the churches there are.
Oh, well, but they don't go mainstream, do they?
It's not their fault. I'm just saying that the industry plays games.
Yeah.
And this is why you find yourself falling into certain categories, because it's all about categories. What genre are you? What genre?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because if you looked at someone like Skit Skunk and Nancy, right, she did rock.
Oh, that's right.
Where was she going to go with that beautiful voice and do kind of like love songs, like soft, sweet love songs? She had to go into the rock belly.
Yeah.
And that's where she made her money, and that's how, that's how she
did really well there. Yeah. I wish I'd have done that.
Yeah, so do I.
Because I was in rock bands, but, they always had me as the stereotype backing vocalist. You know, big earrings and biker jacket. La, la, la. So, but it's not just, you know, the industry is complex, and it still is.
Yes.
And when I look back at it, you know, like I said, I'm quite cynical. I'm like, maybe. Because I was so idealistic and you're young and you don't really think about the world in these terms, you just keep going.
Yeah.
But once you get like I am now, try that. That ball would not work with me now.
Yeah.
No. So it is what it is. Mm. And I can't believe we did anything at all.
True.
Given what we know, how sexist and misogynist it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe we did anything at all.
I think
really
you're
proud.
A girl that's out there, you will make your little show and you can make your little name. And then you have to go about your business doing other things, unless you will, do other things to get up the ladder.
Yeah.
Like sleep around, this, that, and the other. But if you're just a nice girl and you meet someone that thinks you're great, like Barry thought I was great, and he pushed me and we went together and we had a great time dancing and part of the master plan and all the other songs that we did on the album. I was happy for that. But oh yeah, so when me and Barry did finish, then I got a deal with China, Indochina.
Yeah.
And I did, before that, I think I was with Arthur Baker, Love in Return.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was Indochina with You Shouldn't Lie. Mm. You know, so yeah, slowly.
Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, slowly. Yeah.
But without us, I always say this, without the also Rand and the other players that we happen to be, the big players would have had nothing. You can't be a big player without coming through something. We're part of an industry.
Yeah.
We make up some of the numbers that make the industry.
Yeah.
We count just as much as the people that are number one.
Because
without us, you can't. You need numbers.
Yeah.
It's like a football league. There's no point having League One if you haven't got Leagues Two and Premier League.
You need a support team.
Yeah. You need. Yeah. So that's what I'm giving it. So I feel a little bit like we should give ourselves our flowers late in the day.
Yeah, I'm happy for what I did in my career, my little music career, for as long as it took, I'm happy with that.
I mean, like you mentioned just now, I completely forgot about Hyper Go Go and that track I did.
Positiva.
With Positiva. Mm. What's it called? See what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't credited on it, but it's my voice, and that was like a banger.
Yeah.
And who knew? We didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Mm. We were doing everything on analogue. And so there's no knowing where your track's being played, how it's being played, nothing. You can't track it, but I'm tracking it now.
With MTPS.
I'm tracking it now.
PPR.
It's all on YouTube. Yeah. I'll take it all down now.
I was lucky because Barry's very clever and he made sure that we'd done everything properly.
Yeah.
So I still get my PRS and MCPS, and I did that with Arthur Baker. I got my MPS and everything like that.
Well, you got some music that you've recorded in recent times?
No. I have about 19 tracks that I actually recorded that need to producer.
Yeah.
But I came away from that. I think, downhearted. I knew. The last thing I did was in 2010 with this guy that I knew. I produced a couple of tunes at home, and he tried to get me a deal. But he realised he couldn't do it, because now when you want to go and see a record company, you've got to put your CD or whatever in there, in this little thing, this metal thing outside the record deal, outside the record shop, the record company or the publishing company, and it didn't work.
Yeah,
it couldn't work, you know. Mm. So I've got my music at home and I've got all my lyrics, and if anyone who's a producer wants to come and produce me properly, I go down. But I'm an author now, you know. You do move on.
Yeah. Which is where you two come in with the two brown owls.
Correct.
So, because you never knew each other whilst you were singing.
No.
How did you meet then?
We met in a book club, a writing group, should I say, locally in Port Ballard.
Yeah.
And so it's a group of over 40s women. And as the time went on and we all got talking with each other, that's when I discovered Diana. So I didn't know what she looked like or anything. I knew the track, the master plan track, but I didn't know what she looked like or sound like anything. So when we bumped into each other, I thought, oh my goodness, our paths must have crossed, but we couldn't figure out how or where.
Yeah.
But it has to have. I was on the jazz funk scene as much as you, and the Horseshoe has come down to London every week. And we was hanging out, must have been hanging out at the same places. And in the 90s, especially, I raved like a crazy Trojan.
Yeah.
Back then, and I was all over it. Where Giles Peterson was playing and whatever they was doing. So I don't know how we ever met, so we got talking, just trying to suss that out, and we both live in the same area and we've got dogs, and I'm like, we still never bumped into her with the dog, and it was one of them. So once we got talking and we discovered we both like poetry, we like writing, just written the manuscript. I was in my master's at the time and going through my manuscript. We just thought we should do a project together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's natural when you're musicians to do a collab.
Yeah.
Just natural. So I just said, let's do a collab. Why not?
Yeah, I think that if you're a writer, like if you're a musician and you're a writer, then you have to, you do the writing, and then unless you've got a studio at home, then your friend will come and then you'll do some work together. Mm. And then after that, you have to release that record, which makes everything so much more difficult. But as a writer, it's easier, isn't it?
Yeah,
you write, and then you can get your book out on Amazon.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, oh, I've done that. Let it go. oh, I've done that, I'll let it go. It's not such a big process.
Yeah, we just need one editor. We don't need like a keyboard artist to come in. We don't need someone to sample a record. We don't need a sound engineer that just does the drums or program the drums. And we don't need, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. We don't need an A&R and his assistant. We don't need to go and do a showcase. That could go on.
Yeah.
Needs to make music. That's why I say anyone that makes music and does well out of music, there's so many people involved in the process. Yeah. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
It's always a miracle that it all happens the way it does. So, but with the writing process, I suppose it's slightly different until, of course, either of us gets a major deal.
How is it?
With a traditional publisher.
When I was at school, I in my primary schools, I always had creative writing that I always got good marks. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I went to high school, I remember, and this is in Scotland, I remember the teacher that I had nailed me. And I had a really bad time for 2 years with that one teacher. And it put me off of English for probably the rest of the time. Maybe because I was English, maybe because my dad, you know, there was multiple things it could have been. And my class was probably not the best behaved class as well, which didn't really help. But it put me off of writing for quite a bit. How was your education with literature?
Well, it wasn't too bad. My mum, my late mum, she was very big on us learning to read and write before we went to school. So we could read a newspaper before we went to school. And it was like a party trick to show how bright you were, blah, blah, blah. And then I started winning handwriting competitions and poetry competitions when I was about 6. Still got all these bits and pieces, not just for crayoning and doing colouring in. And I used to get book prizes for writing stories right through infants and juniors. And then secondary school, I filled an exercise book with my first novel just to see if I could.
Yeah.
Because writing is innate in me for a fact.
Yeah.
And my teacher thought, well, I want to get her to do her O-level early. And I did my O-level early. And, so it's always been there.
That's good.
But, you know, if I was from a middle-class family, sorry to say, but I was in Birmingham, in the city, urban city, or whatever you want to call it, in the inner city. And access to where I go from there just wasn't available to me. Yeah. Didn't know how to become a journalist. I really wanted to be a journalist. Mm. No, these careers went, people.
Yeah.
We hate you, what you've done to the world, with a passion. Because everyone's got this story about the careers put people. And it steered me away. And I thought, well, you know, I never knew how I was going to do it. So any outlet thereafter I could find to do some writing, I did it, really. So.
That's good. And you, Diana, how was your education?
Well, I left school with no GCSEs. I left school with absolutely no qualifications. When I was younger, I was good at writing stories because I was looking at one of my reports and it says, Diana's very good in English, but she's very easily, what is that word?
Led.
Yeah.
Lack of attention.
I used to like writing stories, but I never thought that I would be a writer.
Never
in a million years.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that when I was in Italy that I managed to start writing the book called Have Some Respect, because I was with a boyfriend at the time and we were splitting up. And I just thought, have some respect, man. And I wrote that as a title. And it went on from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, fate, maybe.
Did that get published?
Well, that's my manuscript now.
Okay, that's right.
The big manuscript now, which I'm trying to get an editor, actually.
Yeah,
it's kind of, it's quite expensive, but but I never knew. And now we've been writing these kind of pamphlets. We wrote the first pamphlet, which is prose, isn't it?
Yeah, and now that's got short stories.
And now we've got another one coming out.
Yeah, the second one's due out soon. We keep saying it, but it is really. Yeah, we've got the material now.
Yeah, we've got the material.
So
and it's
ready
great.
To go. This is as 2 brown hours.
Yeah, 2 brown hours, and it's absolutely great. Mm. You know, I can write Till Kingdom Come.
Yeah. So the first book, how did you come about with that one? Because that's on Amazon.
Yeah. So
how did that work?
My publisher, NT Inc, Matt Trollope, I'm sure you know him.
Yeah.
Right. He, my first book, DJ Hall, and then it followed up by DJ.
What was DJ Hoare about?
DJ Hoare was an observation that, you know, I've got a mini hatred for DJs. I'm not going to be secretive about it. I always thought they put us out of work, put singers out of work, really relying on remixes and sampling Elite Owl away, get some real singers in. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, so I had a little bit of a resentment, but I overheard DJs talking about women in this derogative way. And I thought, but it's a good name, though. There's something about it. And I just thought, right, I'm going to make a book out of that at some point. And just being on the house music scene, and I just found that the women on that scene had a different sensibility to what I've come from, jazz funk, which is just like natural, drink a bit of Lucozade, and we're off. But this is a whole thing and a lifestyle, and I find it fascinating as an observing from the outside coming in. And then I just got cheeky with it, and on holiday thought, right, I'm going to write. So I've got my iPad out. And I wrote every night for 14 days about the club scene and just my observations, and created a few characters around it. And it's essentially about a female who goes from wine barring into the house music scene, and she fully immerses herself into it, and all that entails, all the, you know, renegade
activities.
There's some words for it, but I never seem to know what they are. Right, so some dodgy, it's a tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, it's quite it's got purple prose in there as well, so it's a little bit of everything. And everything I mentioned is something that anyone on the house music scene would know somebody that did that. It doesn't belong to any particular person. It's just, it's a standard story. Getting sick in the toilets, getting sick in somebody's house, staying out too long, going back somewhere we shouldn't have gone back, and all that stuff. That's what it's about. And DJ lifestyles and DJs and their obsession with invoices and things. So because I've met them, of course.
Of course.
So it's a bit of everybody.
Yeah.
If you know the DJ, anyway, that's another story. I'm just not going to say too much. But then that followed up with DJ Wags, Housewives of House. So they're much older. Women are older, and their parents, and bringing up children whilst they're still on the house music scene, and how they navigate that with teenagers. And that the third one in the trilogy is Grandmother, and that is Gram with a G-R-A-M, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And she's serving up in that, the protagonist. It's about her. And so it tells the story of the house music scene, but I don't think there are any books out there that tells the story in the way that I do it as a novel. And with strong female leads. So anyone wants to do the dramatization adaptation, let me know.
You can find the books on Amazon.
They're all on Amazon.
Yeah.
So just look for Jackie Lloyd Brown, and it will all come out.
Yeah.
All stuff and the poetry. So I've already got this label that was willing to look at my work. And I suggested, well, look, keep it in the music vein. Diane and I might want to do a project. What do you think? And it got the okay. So because MT Inc., the publisher, always likes to have everything on a music tip.
Okay.
Can't just put anything on there. Just likes to have the music element to it. So we were able to do that. Yeah. Nice, easy to work with Matt. So, and that's how we got going.
What other books has Matt done?
Oh, Mr. Pikes is his big one, about Tony Pike, who ran the Pikes Hotel in Ibiza, San Antonio, and his adventures back in the day from the 70s to the 80s, including people like Freddie Mercury, Grace Jones, get a mention. Of course, Wham and George Michael. The pool there was the setting for Club Tropicana, famously. So, that was one of his biggest books. He's got one out called, the latest one. What is it called? Shame on me. I can't do it. Code. Something to do with radio. It's a radio station.
Centre Force Radio Station.
Centre Force, FM something or other. So I wouldn't mind, but, you know, I did supply some of the photos for the book. And that's about the station and all the DJs and the culture of music from back then. And prior to that, it's done quite a few more. Always in music, always music titles.
Brandon Block.
Brandon Block, for instance. And but he has other things on the side, so just have a thumb through.
So you, Two Brown Owls released Prose as the first book.
Prose 2 is coming next.
When's that out?
Probably by the time you put this out.
Okay.
Yes, very, very soon, because we've got...
We worked it the other day and we
We know the titles.
Yeah.
So I think it's getting a bit more in your face, a bit more activist-led.
Yeah.
There's a lot of troubles going on, isn't there, more than usual. Yeah. So we cover those from climate change and
war.
And stuff. So
women.
Men.
Men.
Yeah.
Italy. Italy.
No.
Conad.
Conad. It came to me about 5 minutes ago. I was like, when can I slip it in? Conad. Sorry, that's a shop in
Italy. In
Tuscany.
Yeah.
Supermarket. Yeah. Yeah.
So, the plan is to go over and spend time with Diana in Italy. And she can show me around. I've never got there. I've never been there.
That's in the Garfagnana.
Yeah, that's if I get my Italian passport. I'm looking to get my Italian passport, hopefully. Then everything will be as sweet as a nut, really. No, so I'm happy for that.
And it's a great place to write in.
It is.
You know, peaceful, so peaceful over there, compared to London.
This is it, when you get to the stage, you've got all the stories anyway, because a lot of writers need stimulation so that they've got some ideas. But and when you get to this age, we just need the peace and quiet.
Yeah, we've
got
that's the correct.
Stories are just making noises in our heads, characters that we've met.
That's correct.
Peace and quiet would be great.
So how did Prose go down?
Really well. I think we've got quite a... Have you not seen the invoice for the stats yet? I heard... We were on it the other day and it was about...
We were going to look, weren't we?
But I think we've done really well.
Good.
Really shockingly.
Good.
We sold a lot on the launch.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite a fair.
Where was the launch?
The Electric Soho House Electric bar. And in the library there.
Yeah.
Had a private function.
Did you do any readings?
Yes, we did. We both did a reading each from that event.
Was it online?
It's online. Yeah, it's on YouTube. So just search Two Brown Owls and pretty much everything's going to come up. Yeah. So we're everywhere. We've got a podcast as well on Dutty Sink Drama.
Yeah.
Mm. And we have a whole series. So five or six there. Mm. And what else have we got? So, just put Two Brown Owls or Jackie Lloyd Brown or Diana Brown. These things are going to start coming up. Yeah. We're on TikTok.
Yeah.
How do you do TikTok? I'm too old for TikTok.
No, TikTok's very simple, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, it's a necessary evil. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, we've got it.
How does it work? Because I'm seems to be, it's a different world for me.
Yeah, it's quick. Your films... All the films go. You have to flick up, and if you don't like anything, just flick away.
You can see all these things. It's very interesting.
And then we'll post. Well, this is it. And the more you like something and spend time looking at it, the more of the same they'll give you.
Okay.
So the algorithms work like that or something. But people who are in sales seem to have done really well out of it.
Yeah.
And there's such a thing as book talk as well. Hashtag book talk.
What's book talk?
It's a hashtag that works really well when you make a post on there. So I'm still getting to grips with it. I do social media for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, well, I've got to adapt and still getting to know it. But it may be banned because it's in discussion now in America. TikTok.
Oh, right.
Let's not talk about it, but it's very, very political right now, football, because America wants to buy it out because they don't trust the owners of it at this present time. It's actually right on the table right now.
Yeah.
And the implications of banning it would cause eruptions because... Let me not go into that. No one's listening. No one's listening to that.
What do you do? Do you do readings from your short stories or poems?
Yeah,
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You have a profile.
Yeah,
you have a profile where you put everything on your profile and then people just tick they like it.
Yeah.
They like it, whatever. And it's just another kind of one like that, isn't it?
Yeah,
another like medium.
Instagram, yes. Yeah. It's just shorter and quicker.
Yeah.
And I just think the younger people have not got the attention span.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so appealing.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click until you see some. But there's some interesting things on there.
There are.
Very interesting topics.
The rabbit hole is different.
Yeah. I've just never ventured deep down into that rabbit hole.
I just sort of forced it.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's some interesting stuff on there. So you shouldn't be worried about not going on there. You should go on there. I think I've learned quite a lot and I've seen quite a lot of things. You know? Lots of things.
Yeah, yeah.
How to make a face balm, for instance, or what's going on in America, or so many different things that I've actually kind
and nostalgic
of
things as well. But everything you see on there is actually on YouTube.
Yeah.
But they've just done it in tiny little bites.
And if you want to find something, then you'll find it, and then you go, because there was this thing called Silligen. There was this guy that came up, and he was talking about what's going to happen, what's happening in the earth, and this, that, and the other. And then he said, everybody needs to get Silligen. So okay. I thought, what's Silligen? So I looked
at Silligen.
And basically, it's a it's collagen for your face.
Okay.
It's a kind of collagen for your face, melanin.
Yeah, yeah.
So it helps with melanin. And I thought, wow, see, I've learned something. Whether I buy it or not is another thing, but at least I looked it up, and it's an actual product.
Yeah.
And it's expensive as well. It's about $189. Mm. For like 150 mil. Well,
for commerce, it's like a must-have. So
It depends on what you
that's
want.
That's what they're saying.
In,
lots
really.
Of yeah.
Do you run the shop through TikTok?
People do. They run shops. They do live shops as well, live auctions. I don't get that side of it. So I'm just doing enough for my clients, and that is post video, find the decorations, use the voiceovers, bit of text, bosh. I haven't gone any further than that, so I've got to write a book.
When you're writing, you need the space and the time to do so many things, and then you need to have the kind of your head space to actually write as well.
And TikTok does clog up the head space. And it kills time.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So you, being a writer, you have to be disciplined as well.
Clear the head.
So Two Brown Owls have Prose 2 forthcoming.
Yeah.
And then what's next after that?
Prose 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Prose 4 will be all short stories, a little bit longer.
Yeah.
About 2K each. Yeah. So that would be a bigger, more in-depth tome. Mm. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jackie Loy Brown and Diana Brown.
Thank you very much indeed.
We are the two... Brown.